Justin Gatlin is the latest in a long line of sprint sensations to emerge from the USA.
Gatlin got a good start.
Look at this man coming through now.
Gatlin.
What a fantastic performance
from Gatlin.
It's all about Gatlin.
Ultimate goal is to be one of the best sprinters in history.
And what a fantastic performance of Gatlin. And look at the time.
It's the American leading the Jamaican at the moment.
He knows. He is the world champion.
Justin Gatlin is the world champion here in London.
Hey, what's up, family? Another episode of Ready, Set, Go. We in the building. It's time for another episode. You know who's over here. My co-host, big in the building. What's up? Say your name.
My name is Rodney.
Tell who you are.
Rodney Green, man. Welcome, 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 everybody, man. We have a few thank yous we want to get out there, man. Justin, go ahead and start and pop them off.
Hey, man. Hey, first of all, before we get to these thank yous, man, you know, you've been kind of NMIA this whole week, though, man. What's good?
Listen, I had some bad guacamole. I didn't know you shouldn't heat up guacamole or you can't let it sit for a while. I don't even eat guacamole like that. Yeah, I had a little bit of food poisoning and I was out of commission for the whole weekend.
Well, hold on, man. Ain't no one told you that you can't. First of all, you shouldn't eat guacamole that's been sitting out all day, let alone heat it up in a microwave
I didn't know that. You see, the way I grew up, guacamole is a delicacy. So we ain't never had it. You never had guacamole. We had cheese and crackers.
I feel like y'all over there eating guacamole with your hand like this. And ooh, pass the guac.
Yeah, man. My daughters nursed me back to health, though. So thank them and my wife. You know, they bought me some medicine. Nursed me back to health.
That's what I'm talking about, man. Being a girl dad, has real benefits, dog.
It does.
Real benefits. Because where was Raymond at?
Listen, he told his mama to get to buy me so I could get better. But he did not come in that room, though.
Hey, bro, I imagine Raymond sit on the couch and then someone come downstairs. He look at him up from his phone and be like, he good?
That's probably what he did.
Oh, I'm in trouble, dog. I got two boys, so you already know I'm in trouble. Then.
Yep. You gonna end up in the old folks home.
For sure. I'm gonna have my old folks home already picked out and everything. I'm gonna send them the pamphlet and everything. Like, hey, man, y'all just send me over here, man, because... Just cut straight to the chase. Don't act like y'all gonna take care of me, because you're not.
Thanks.
So, all right. So let's get down to it, man. We want to give a lot of thanks to the fans out there for supporting us, for being with us from the beginning. We didn't know exactly how this was gonna go. And to be honest, me and Rod are like friends. He is the godfather of my youngest son. He is the close uncle of my oldest son. So we are family, you know what I mean? So to start this off has been really organic and really genuine for us. So we want to say thank you for allowing us to share our bond on record and talk about the things we normally would talk about. Yeah. You have something to say?
No.
Okay. All right. We're going to get started then.
We're going to get started with the thank yous, man.
All right. Boy. What candle scent is that over there on your...
Oh, man, that's my wife, man. It's aromatherapy, relax. That's how she get down, man. She like to relax, man. So, you know, shout outs to my wife, Jo. She a fitness queen right now, man. She doing her thing, man. She looking real good.
Good luck to her, too. She got that competition coming up. Look at her.
She do.
She done gave you the side eye. I know she just gave you the side
eye. She did. All
right, let's get to these mail. Let's get to these thank yous for sure, man. So we're going to start off with Rachel Childers, 6823. Thank you so much. I'm totally a Justin Gatlin fan. Always have been. Mad respect for you. And you definitely know how to speak publicly. I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Rachel. You know, over time, we've done so many post-interviews, pre-interviews for races that you start to get an understanding of how to answer certain questions and what questions are going to come to you. And Rod always says, man, boy, you be out there moving, dodging those questions like a politician mixed with a little bit of Muhammad Ali up in there. So, but I would appreciate it. Thank you so much, Rachel. Thank you very much. We appreciate you watching.
We do. Next one is from Jordan Bennett, 9875. I'm watching from Jamaica, and I must say I really enjoy your podcast. You guys are unbiased and speak with so much love for the sport and fairness and blessings. Look, that's what we wanted to bring to the platform, man. We wanted to bring a real podcast, no shade to any other podcast, trying to be unbiased and have good analysis on track races around the world. So thank you, Jordan.
Facts, definitely.
Our next one is from Chinchabud, 31. Love how the hosts look at track and field as a whole, not having a biased discussion based on nationality. True track fans. Listen, even when we were running track, and me and Justin, you can speak on this too, we're track fans while we were running track. Like, I remember when I was running, man, I would always, my favorite event to go watch was the high jump. Like, if I could do any other event, it would be high jump.
For real?
For real, bro. I love high jump.
That's crazy.
Yeah, man.
I did not know that.
Yeah, high jump, man. High jump is the thing. I used to always go. And then my homeboy used to do horn jump too, man. Donald Thomas. Shout out to Juice.
Oh, yeah. That's the dude right there, dog.
That's Juice.
Dude. Hey, boy, he took me to the club one time there in the Bahamas, man. Hey, Juice, if you are in the Bahamas when we get there for World Relays, you got to take us out again, man.
Hey, I'm going to hit him up. I'm going to see where you going to be, though.
Yeah, for sure. Listen, we went to the club and it was just the club was just a big old dance floor. That's all it was. And he literally went over to the bar, ordered drinks, bottle service, not just drinks like you sip in a cup, bottles. He moved people out the way and made a circle. He said, hey, right here, stand right here, Gatlin. And we stood in the middle of the floor with a circle of people around us as if we had a section. So, hey, I loved it, though. I loved it. I would do it again. So, Juice, if you there, bro, hit me up, man. Hit us up for sure. Hey, so we're going to hit the next thank you, man. Amy Wibben, 4380. So the media, this one makes me laugh so much right here. So the media made us hate Justin for nothing? I feel manipulated. The crazy thing is I never get a chance to show my personality, right? Because you're always running. And my persona on the track is pretty, I pretty much give off asshole energy. You know what I'm saying? Like I get to that line. You know what I mean? Like you see the fire in my eyes. No one really talks to me. I have that face on, that appearance on. Don't talk to me. I'm going to bite your head off. But in reality, this is who I am every day. I'm just like this every day. And the fact is, I love talking about track. I love track. I love helping in the community of track and field. And I really, for a long time, didn't know I had a voice in track and field. And now I have an opportunity to kind of showcase my voice, my thoughts, my opinions, my passion with one of my best friends. And, you know, you guys are showing us love. So, yes, the media has manipulated to make you feel like I'm the black hat. I'm the villain. I'm this guy that is just diabolical. And the whole time I'm out there rooting for y'all kids, man. At track meets. I'm out there at the gate paying for my own ticket, going into meets, rooting for your kids and everything like that and showing inspiration. But, you know, don't always believe what the media is going to say. They're going to hype things up. And the fact is that there's always going to be love in track and field. I feel like if you run track and field for a long time, you have to have love for track and field regardless. You know, when you love something, you can hate it or you can dislike it for a moment, but at your platform, your base is always going to be love for it, man. And that's how I feel as it is for me with track and field. So what
we got, we about to dive into the show.
We got one more. One more mailbag left. You know, first of all, I should never be a substitute teacher because I get names wrong all the time. So at Malik 4773. I see the show is being the voice of track and field in the future. Great stuff. You know, as much as we both love being competitors, you know what I mean, and want to be the best at what we do, I think we just stand in our lane, man. We enjoying what we're doing. We stand in our lane, and we just kind of steadily growing and having fun with it, you know? So once that moment comes, we realize that, you know, the stakes are high, then we'll compete if necessary. But right now, I think one thing for sure is I want to get that plaque on that wall, man. I want to get that YouTube plaque on that wall and show that, you know, the community of track and field really taps in and they're really showing love to our channel. And that plaque isn't just going to be for us. The plaque is that we have spoke about track and field so much that YouTube recognized it. And this is the perfect year to do so in Olympic year, for sure.
Yeah, hopefully we can get some changes with these voices, man. You know, we feel like a lot of changes need to happen sometimes. We ain't going to talk about them yet, but yeah, a few things got to change. It's got to
change. But let's get into it, man. What's on the track? What's on the track, man, this week?
The track is hot in Claremont, boy, over there at Pure Athletics. Lance Brahman's meet. Listen, they had that 17-year-old boy, Christian Miller, from St. John Striders. Guess what he ran?
So last year, he ran 10-0. I remember that.
Yep.
So he came back this season. He'd been kind of quiet. So what did he run this track meet?
He ran a legal 9.93. Legal.
Damn.
Yeah, legal 993. And he's not even big. He looked like he about 5'7", 5'6".
Oh, he a little rolling.
Yeah, he don't even look like a big guy. He doesn't, you know, Assam last year did the same thing with a 9'8", but Assam was bigger. Assam was maybe like 6 feet, you know, 6'1".
Yeah, Assam is about 5'11". He's up there.
Yeah, he's a bigger kid. Yeah. But this kid ain't that big. He's that kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, 9.93, man. I got to put him. I officially, or we officially, with your agreeance, stamp him on the RSG list. Bam.
You know what? Definitely officially stamp him on RSG's watch list. Why I say this? Because if you read the news, they have canceled, was it under 20?
Yeah, under 20.
They canceled Tolima under 20 championships. And once again, I think in our sport, that's a definitely injustice, because now you have robbed a generation of athletes to prep themselves to get ready for that next level. You know what I mean? Our sport, and especially being an elite athlete in our sport, is about experience, experience, experience. You see a lot of gifted athletes go to overseas for the first time or go to championships for the first time, and they freeze up or they don't show up big. It's because they don't have that experience. The talent is still there, but they don't have that experience. So I think they're robbing these kids of that experience to be able to travel internationally, for one. And then two, you know, compete against other kids their age and other athletes their age. You know, those are the people they're going to see years from now.
Yeah,
constantly. It's their same generation. So this is something that we should have. So, you know, we're going to have him on the watch list for sure, because he said officially that he will be at the Olympic trials. And he looked at the camera, man, just like this. He said, "I'm going to be at the Olympic trials." I was like, "All right, handle business."
Why not? The Olympic qualifier is 10 flat. He qualified.
Oh, for sure.
They can't tell him he can't be there.
Oh, for sure. Oh, for sure. And to look back in the past, I know he has to go through two other rounds, but that 993 would have got him on maybe 2016 Olympic team, and probably, I don't remember the numbers right, third place in 2015 probably would have got him on that team too.
But let's definitely agree that a one-off is different from runarounds. Is his coach, I don't know what his coach name is. I'll probably find out in the future. I don't know if his coach prepared him for at least three rounds of high caliber, you know, rounds, to where he's running against people who he possibly look up to. You know, that's definitely tough. I feel like somebody like Noah has went through that. Somebody of like Michael Norman has went through that, where they was running against somebody like you when they were teenagers, and look at them now, they're actually professionals also. So how do you, or what would be wise words from you to him in terms of going through those rounds at USA's?
I mean, he did everything with that 993 already that he could do on his level, which I mean is elite prep, right? He's young, he's still 17. You know, running that time right now would put him actually as the fastest collegiate, and he's not even in college. So I think that him and his coach should choose wisely on the meets that go to next, leading up to the Olympic trials. Don't go out there on some kind of like sprinting campaign just because you're running fast right now. I would say double down and get yourself ready for rounds, so that 993 will be your last final race instead of your first or second race. And then now for the finals, you're gas. Because what happens is, when you get to that final, sometimes it's not about your speed, it's about your attrition. It's about who can maintain a successful race pattern, strong race pattern in the finals.
And being out there at the Olympic trials is draining, man. You know, Oregon could have some crazy behind heat that you might not be used to. I remember my first time out there, I was like, boy, this is different, boy. I thought Florida was hot, but it's like a weird heat, though. You know what I mean? When it gets real hot.
Well, I mean, you're going to get assaulted anyway, because it's either you're going to get this weird heat or either it's going to be pollen season and then everybody is like suffocating, trying to like warm up and everything. You like, because all them trees around. So prepare. Bring your sunscreen. Bring a lot of water. Bring your Claritin, whatever you're supposed to take, and be ready for that trials. Because it's that moment. You got to seize that moment for sure.
True. We have another teenager, man. Another teenager who ran the collegiate best. So that kid ran the high school best, which is damn near the world's best. And no, it is the world's best. It's the world lead. And then you have this 19-year-old, Tamaris McCallum. I hope I said your name right, sir. He ran 994 at USC at Mount SAC.
Hold on, man. You're not even telling what his affiliation is.
And he is a volunteer. Yes, he is. Listen, they doing it out there in Tennessee, boy. Listen.
Rocket Car will always be home, sweet home to me. That's what I'm saying, dog.
I'd like to see you and Coleman side by side doing that.
And we do got a picture out there hidden like this. I don't know if we've ever sang the song together, though, for sure.
But yeah, man, obviously, man, Dwayne Ross is doing this thing out there at Tennessee, man. I think this is third year in or second year in, but he's definitely showing that he could build a really solid program. I mean, he showed us before, I mean, at A&T, but this program that he's at has a lot more money than A&T.
I mean, quiet as it's kept. I mean, you look at the athletes he's had from A&T going into Tennessee, like he's built successful athletes who have transferred over to professional athletes from college.
100%. You know,
he had Belcher, he had Sturger, he had, who else he had?
Sturgis?
Yeah, he had Sturgis.
He had Sturgis. Who also ran
10-7.
Yeah, she ran, that's when he was at A&T. He's at A&T. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I remember that, yeah. So he's definitely, you know, had really great success. He knows how to coach, you know what I mean? But yeah, man, he's doing out there at Tennessee. This makes his recruiting so much easier. He'd be like, you want to run fast? Just look at them. That's all you got to do. he ain't got to say that. I'm doing it on the female and the male side. You want to be like them? Come on over to Tennessee. You're going to be like, come on over to Death Row. Come on over to death.
you wanna be on that track and be your boss? Go ahead and sign with Coach Ross.
Yep.
That's what he's doing out there, dude.
That's probably all he gotta say, man.
But did you watch the race? Did you watch his race? McCullum's race?
Did I
you
did.
Watch it? Okay. So you saw that he actually ran that 994 coming back. He wasn't even leading the pack the whole time.
Yeah, he ran the coming from the back.
Yeah.
Which is pretty impressive. Pretty impressive, because you have to have some type of poise to run down everybody, not under panic. You know what I mean? Especially if you haven't raced those people before. You either know one or two things: that you can do that to those people, or you're poised enough to just trust in your race strategy in order to get back into the race and win. You know what I mean?
Well, if you look at what Sears did and how McCullum has did his race, they have both were very poised, like you said, in their race strategy. The pressure didn't get to them. They didn't lose focus of what their race pattern was, how they supposed to roll out their race. They stuck to what they were supposed to do, and they both dropped big time. So shouts out to them over there. Go Vols. Go Vols.
Go Vols. Go Vols.
Come on, man. I'm gonna cheer for the Eagles. I'm gonna cheer for the Eagles this year.
Hey, you're right. Hey, next on our list, we got an LSU alum who just opened up her season.
It was LSU invite this weekend, wasn't it?
Yes.
It was.
Superstar Leah Hobbs, man. She opened up her season at 1083.
That's my girl, dog. 1083. I like Aaliyah, dog. Because she shows so much consistency. And I feel like she doesn't get the praise for her consistency. She runs so consistent indoors, and she's really good at transferring outdoors. Now she's at that point where she's hitting the times from a 60, and if it computes over, she's running those 10-8s. So if she maintains that speed and gets ready for trials. I mean, she's looking to have a really good season this year, man. Really good season.
Yeah, 10-8. Ain't too many pros. I think that's the second fastest time this year. Yeah, behind Jashea Sears. So, yeah, 10.83. You know, it's only going to get better. You know, as the season go on for pros, those times come down. You know, going all the way up to a trial. So, shout outs to Leah Hobbs, another person that opened up their season at that meet was Stevie. Stephen Gardner, man, ran 44.4. Yeah.
Okay.
Ran
44.4.
Man, so Stevie is healthy. You know, he's ran 44 out the gate, man. Shout out to Stevie. You know, we love to see you back. We love to see you in the mix and doing your thing, man. Outdoors. He's been running indoors and training and everything, but I know once we see him run 44, Stevie is back to being Stevie. You know,
that's
when we see 43, and Stevie is on another planet.
you know what? The funny thing is, watching Stevie run and then watching Shanae run, and coincidentally being both in your country, man, I'd be watching them run. I'd be like, man, I wish I was taller. Just the way they run, it just looked like it's just a cheat code. It just looked like they just turning over. And it's like one step to everybody's 1.5 step, and they just keep turning over, dog, around the track.
Listen, their stride pattern is so crazy, and the form is so good, man. It's like how could they not be good at track? It's crazy.
Sure. We had another breakout run, a nice run, definitely from Gabby at LSU.
Oh yeah, Gabby did run at LSU. I think Gabby is on a campaign. She's on an Allyson Felix campaign, but she could call it a Gabby Thomas campaign to be on the 4x1 and to be on the 4x4. And she is making her case. She is like, hey, look, Abby Steiner did it. Allyson Felix did it. Hey, look, it's my turn now. She just sold him. She ran a Windy 10.8 and a 100. And she just ran 50.3 and a 400. And that's only her first 400 for the year. So she in the pool, lest she get injured, God forbid. She in a 4x1 and a 4x4 pool. You can't deny her. You know what I mean? Unless if she makes the team in the 1 and the 2, they got to pool her for the 4x1 also. Because they've done it before. They've done it with Abby. And they've done it with Allyson. You know what I mean? I think even if you're running the 4 that year, they drop Allyson to the 100 for the 4x1. And even if Abby didn't run the 400 at the end of the year, she ran the 200, they took her up to the 4x4. So, you know, there is no case for the relay people, not for her making her campaign to be on both relays.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, I look at the plan as in, if I go out there and become a potential threat in the 100 and also a healthy threat in the 400, the 200 going to be easy.
100%.
You see what I'm saying? So now she is a threat across the board. And like you said, she punching a ticket for the 4x1 and she punching a ticket for the 4x4. Everything is covered. She good. You know, so, you know, shouts out to her because obviously watching her run at Texas Relay in person, she looked very dominant, very strong. She still had kick with 50 to go in her 200. And watching her run that 100, she looks very strong and she finished power through the finish line. So then if you also watch this 400, she had similar traits there as well. Like she just came through with that last 50 meters to go in that 400 and she handily beat it. She handily beat 400 meter runners who do this for a living as well. So shout out to her for sure. What we got?
Shoot, they had a meet out there. And Africa too, man. Shoot.
Oh, Nairobi.
You know it, man. You know, we got to talk about my boy. But the American, the young bull American, man, he doing his thing, man. Courtney Lindsay and Leslie Tobogo, man, they ran away from the field in Nairobi. They did, boy, 1971 with a negative 1.5.
Woo, a negative?
Negative.
Negative win.
Negative.
Jeez.
Listen. I don't know. Courtney had a good race plan. He was like, "Boy, this boy rolled people in the straightaway. I'm gonna get off this corner and I'm gonna go." They say, if he come in, he going to run out of real estate, boy, because I know he could go. I know he could go. And sure well, enough, know.
Yeah.
That boy ran out of real estate. If they had two more meters, Courtney would have got beat. But listen, they don't. It's only 200 meters and 200 meters.
So he came over with that W. Courtney with came over with that W.
He came with that W. And man, and it was so graceful, man. You know, it looked Courtney looked so strong and menacing off that turn, bro. The only person who I seen run a turn like him is maybe Arian. Maybe Arian in that 200, man. He runs like some of the fastest turns out there, man. And Kenny Bernard runs a really good turn too. But listen, when he got off that corner like he was running from the police. And he was gone. About 50 meters left, that 400 meter strength that Tobogo has started to kick in, man. And he started rolling them back up.
Yeah, that was a beautiful strategy that Courtney put together. You know, obviously working with Dennis, you know, Dennis is a kind of coach who's a strategize your race plan. He looks at who you're going to race against. And then weeks before it's time for you to go and run, he's preparing you for whatever big dog is in that race. So obviously they was well prepared for Tobogo in this race. They beat him off the turn. They made sure they created enough distance. And once again, like you said, Tobogo ran out of real estate and they both came away with the world lead. So shouts out to Courtney running that race strategy, probably to the T.
100%, 100%. Shoot, we got another Dennis athlete. I just brought him up, Kenny Bernard. It would have been a world lead, but he was just a little over the allowable win legal limit. And he ran 9.91 in 100, man. We should have known that was coming, man. He said that he feels a lot more confident in the start. It looks as so. He gets away really well now. But he ran 9.91 in that race.
Shouts out to Kung Fu Kenny on that, man.
Yeah.
I loved training with Kenny because Kenny was that kind of guy. He had like a very unorthodox type of speed. Like he's that kind of athlete who can get up to speed very quickly and he can hold that same speed for a very long time. I always saw him at practice and seeing him run like Olympic trials in 2020. Like he is a 9.8 runner. He can get up to that frequency and hold that frequency for a very long time. Like you said, him working on his start, if he gets his start together, he's throwing his hat into the ring. You got a whole another 100 meter sprinter that's ready to be threatened for the top of that podium.
Yeah. Yeah. Shout out to Kenny. But something interesting hit me about this meet, bro. I ain't going to tell you no lie because I kind of seen it before. The world lead in the 400 was ran here by Botswanans, please forgive me. Bayapo Nodori from Botswana ran 44.10. But his countryman, Leongo Scotch from Botswana, ran 44.54, right? And we all know Leslie Tobogo has already ran 44.2. These guys are organizing a campaign for an Olympic 4x4 goal. If no other country sees that, I'm trying to give you the cheat code. I've seen this in 2012 with my country in the Bahamas when everybody was spinning all those cylinders. Listen, that's what's happening right now in Botswana. These guys are organizing a threat to the 4x4 goal. If you're not thinking about it, coaches from every country, you need to start thinking about it because they're going to make a run and y'all better be ready.
So they need one more runner. Really, one more runner to drop one.
They only need another runner and they really got one. They had somebody that got sixth place at 46.13. That means on the fly, he's 45. Those other guys are 43s. So you only really need that other guy
to maintain.
Once again, Botswana's, his name is Statago. I hope I said it right. Correct me in the comments.
You sound like you're from Botswana, though.
You do? Don't say that, boy. They're going to come after you, boy. He ran 46.13. So that means on the fly, he's 45 all day.
Yeah, you're right.
Shoot, and nine times out of 10, what they'll do with a kid like him, they either put him out the hole or they'll put him on third leg. That's what they'll do.
So a little birdie told me that actually Team Botswana will be in World Relays. So you might get to see this whole prototype come to fruition right there in NASA. So we might see something nasty from Team Botswana. So,
bro, we'll like see. I said, we'll see. Most of these times, this would people be running in August. They running it in April. In April.
Yeah.
So you're right. We might see something very special at World Relays. And you say they say they're going to be there. So, you know what I mean? That's what I saw on that list, man. I don't think they're going to run a 4x1. They're going to run a 4x4.
I agree with you. I mean, looking at that, I can't see any other short sprinters coming out of Botswana right now that would, you know, build a quartet, you know, around Tobogo. So I believe that they're going to come with a 4x4 for sure.
Yep. That's what he's going to do, man. That's what he's going to do.
So what about in China, man? China and Xiamen. I'm actually going to be in Xiamen in about a week, less than a week. I'm going over there to do some campaigns, things like that. You know what I'm saying? So, but man, right now, this weekend in Xiamen, they had the first Diamond League race.
They did. And the women's hurdles did not disappoint. Listen, Jasmine Camacho Quinn has entered the chat. At 12:45, she was like, oh, y'all forgot about me. I'm here. It was a good race. I think it was a second race out. You know what I mean? Second race out, she went in and she won the race. It wasn't an easy race. My countryman got second, Devin Charlton. You know what I mean? Season's best of 12:49. You know what I mean? So it was a really, really good race. You had the world champion in that race. You had the world record holder in that race. You had the indoor world record holder in that race. Man, these hurdlers don't be ducking no smoke, boy. They lining it up.
But they can't, though. See, that's the issue, though. When you have such an exciting event, you would think that they would have more opportunity at places to run. Throughout my whole career, the issue with females' short hurdles is the fact that they only had limited places to run. I love watching the female short hurdles. 100-meter hurdles, you don't know what's going to happen. When they line up, it can be, like you said, you can go down the list, down the lanes. It's going to be Olympic champion. It's going to be a former Olympic champion. It's going to be a world record holder. It's going to be a former world record holder. It's going to be the current world champion. They're going to be lined up. And then you're going to have some locals. You know what I'm saying?
This is true. They got to have the locals. You got to have like two locals.
You got to have two locals. You know what I mean?
So two locals.
I'm not surprised that they're producing those times already so early. And that those times are going to keep going throughout this whole season. Because Tania Marshall just dropped a 12:42. So she already bettered her time from the last previous week. So she's already sharpening her sword, get ready for battle again.
Yeah, man. None of those girls like losing, man. So I definitely think that world record goes again this year. I just think so. I think so, bro. I don't know who it's going to be. I can't say who it's going to be, but I definitely think that world record goes again this year.
I'm going to have to see some consistent 12 threes to even bring that into, I mean, what's the world record again? Golly, they keep lowering the world record. Isn't it like
12:18 or something like that?
Yo, that's crazy, Doug.
I think it's 12:18.
That's crazy. I remember when the world went crazy when Kitty ran 12:20. You know what I'm saying? Man, yeah, that's crazy. Now they running that in semis.
Well, these girls, Camacho Quinn ran a windy 12:01 last year. She did. I remember that.
Man.
She did, man. They out there whooping ass and taking names, man. These girls are doing it. Shoot, you had, in the hurdles and the men's hurdles race was fast also, 13:11.
Oh, yeah. We had Roberts.
Yep. Daniel Roberts. Daniel Roberts was in that race. Shoot,
Tinch,
I think.
Tinch was in that race.
13:16, I think.
Yeah.
That was the second place. Yeah. Yep. But I think they go, the Olympic champion was in that race too, right?
Parchman
was in that race too. I think they meet Grant in the next China Diamond League.
That's going to be nice.
Yeah,
that's going to be nice.
Oh, it's going to be real nice because Grant waiting on them. Grant waiting on them.
But you also, you know, you can't take anything away from Parchman. You know what I mean?
Oh, no.
I think he's the kind of person, when he came back from his injury, he realized that it isn't all about just ready, set, go, compete, compete, compete. He strategizes. He watches. And that's how he became an Olympic champion. He looked at what Grant's weaknesses was, and he capitalized on those weaknesses while in the race. And even though he didn't run a great time or had a great position in this past race, the season's still long for him. So you're going to see him come back, you know what I'm saying, stronger and better, because he has to defend his title. Prize on the line.
Listen, man, I'm not worried about Parchman. They told him, somebody told me, and I don't know how true it is. Please, somebody let me know in the comments. They told me Parchman still be going to a real job. Like he got a real job. He go to work and then he go train. Like, for real, like, that's what he do. Like, he don't just train all day. Like, he go to work and then he trains. I don't know how true that is. Somebody told me he got like a real job he go to.
Boy, listen, if that's true, the mental fortitude that he has, it's hard beating somebody like that, dog. It's hard beating somebody like that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I was like, what you mean he got a knot? They like, yeah, bro, he go to work for real. I'm like for real? Like a job job? Like a job? So yeah, man. Shout out to Parchman, man.
For sure.
Sha'Carri opened up her season this year, man. She got second in the race. She was beaten by a young 19-year-old named Tori Lewis, man. Shout out to Tori, man. That was a really solid field she ran against, being in Sha'Carri, Anavia Battle, Tamara Clark. It was a really experienced field because most of those girls have been pro for either 2 to 3 or 4 years right now. The times, I don't hold any type of candle to the times that was ran, because a lot of the sprint times wasn't really, really super fast. I mean, I want to see how this other Diamond League shapens out to what people will run. A lot of people said they were tired from the travel, like people who I know that are there. It was like the travel was just horrendous, you know what I mean? So I want to see like what the next Diamond League looks like.
You know, do you mean? Feel that's the same way for Christian and Fred?
I do.
You know, do you think they were just taxed from the... from the travel and everything?
I do. You know, being that they're already on their side, we're going to see how this next Diamond League play out. And if the time drop in the next Diamond League, yeah, we could accredit all those times to them being tied.
I mean, to be honest, a lot of athletes, foreign athletes, haven't traveled to China in years. Like,
since COVID.
Think about it, before COVID. Before COVID. So we're looking at 2019, 2018. You know, when COVID hit, everything started shutting down. So now we into what, 2024? So we haven't been in that part of the world competing in a very long time, almost half a decade. So that's a long time not to get acclimated to like a time zone, also foods and everything, just the climate over there as well. So I think these athletes had a little shock in their system. But like you said, they're going to be ready. They're going to bounce back.
Yeah, definitely. They're definitely going to bounce back, man. What else we got on the docket?
Man, you know what? I think it's time for, we haven't had in a long time, it's time for another Olympic story, man.
Olympic story.
Olympic story time.
What was it like, man? Tell our fans what it was like, man, on the walk-in on the Olympics. You ever indulge in any of the walk-ins where they have all the countries walking around the track? It's like 900 countries around the world.
I've been to two walk-ins, 2004 and 2016. I didn't walk in 2012. Dennis was not a fan of doing Olympic walks. And for the fans at home and other athletes too, who are, you know, aiming to make Olympic teams, and this is one thing that so many people, when they make Olympic teams, they want. They want to get on the podium, win a medal, and they want to walk. They want to walk in with their team in their country and be seen on television, right? So I want to take you down like a little story path of how it looks to be a part of the walk-in for the Olympics. It's not very, the world sees the glamour as you walk into the stadium, right? But let's rewind it a little bit and talk a little bit how you get to the point of getting to the stadium. So you have to be up at a certain time. You have to be dressed in your whole uniform. Your uniform is actually tailored to you. Once you make the Olympic team, you know, you get tailored for your walk-in ceremony uniform right there at the Olympic trials. And then that's all shipped to you and given to you. In 20, In 2004, it was the company called Roots who made our uniforms. And in 2016 and in 2012, it was Ralph Lauren. So shouts out to them too. When you get there, everyone has to meet up at a meetup point in the Olympic Village. And on that day, it's pandemonium. Every country who has athletes there, they're all meeting up. It's like over 100 buses, clearly, of athletes getting on their buses, getting to that point of getting to the stadium to walk into the stadium. Now, mind you, everything is in alphabetical order. So guess where United States is? In the back. So you got to go through all these other countries who are walking in. So imagine yourself in a single file line with your country. And now Team USA has well over 100 athletes who are competing just in track and field. So imagine other sports and disciplines that are also going to walk. I've walked in with Michael Phelps. We walked in with Serena. We walked in with NBA basketball players, Kobe, KD, all these guys. So you're literally going to meet all these superstars and people that you probably idolized growing up watching on television, and you're going to get an opportunity to stand shoulder to shoulder with them and walk into the stadium. Yes, dream come true. But here's a nightmare, though. The nightmare is the wait time for you to get inside that stadium is usually around 2 to 3 hours. You're going to be standing around, slowly pacing yourself, walking forward, standing, walking forward, standing, walking forward, standing for a good almost 3 hours. Now, obviously, the superstars who are in the building, like the people I just mentioned, you think they're going to be waiting in line that long? No. As soon as we get close to the front, like the entrance tunnel, that's when you got these guys and these ladies coming in and they're going to jump in line and then they're going to kind of get, they're going to kind of walk into the stadium. By the time they get in the stadium, you got like a little sneaky exit door. So they'll walk in and NBC will put the camera on all the notable people who are going to be making a change or a difference or highlight in the Olympics. And those are people you kind of want to stand by. So you make sure that your mama can see you on the TV all the way from America and be like, look, that's my baby right there. You on TV standing next to Michael Phelps or standing next to Serena. But once they get inside the stadium, most of those people quickly usher themselves to the exit door and then they leave outside the stadium. So that's the real deal. You're going to be in line waiting as if you were waiting, you know, at a car dealership or anything else that you were waiting in line for. So make sure you know all the athletes listening and the people who are going to be watching. Yes, it's going to be a long, long wait. And usually coaches don't like that because now that standing, sitting, standing, it's like almost as if you went on a vacation and you walked around a whole city. So your legs are going to be tired. So usually if you are starting the Olympics off, especially for track and field, short sprinters, I would go against you going walking into the stadium because you're almost 2 days out before it's time for you to compete. So that's usually what happens.
Yep, man. Sure. What else we got?
Man, we got mailbag.
What we got in our mailbag today?
Mailbag. You see it?
Yeah, I see it. What we got? All right. We got Richie Riches. Could you have transitioned your track or sprint speed into NFL receiver if you had all the time to dedicate training for football? I think that's a two-part answer because I coach football athletes and track athletes. I think there are two parts. I think you have good football athletes that can run track, and then you got track runners that try to play football, right? The good football players that run track end up being really good at track, but they could catch and they could do everything that a football still does. Hence, Tariq Hill, right? He's really good at track, or he was very good at track, but he was a football player that ran track. You know what I mean? So that's the difference. And then you have track runners that try to play football because they're fast. What makes a good football player to me, and which I've seen from analyzing it from doing speed and agility, is a football player that can stop and start so quickly on a dime. You know what I mean?
that right there is a tool in football that will make a lot of money, stopping and starting on a dime. Real track runners can't stop on no doggone dime. They're going to stop and they're going to fall out of their route and everything to the side. But I think if Justin had the right coach in the NFL or college who could come and retool his speed, because a lot of people won't believe it. He's ran 4 flat before in the 40. they would have to retool that type of speed to stop on a dime and to cut and everything else. So, or they just would have to put him on a bunch of go routes.
As soon as I would come onto the field, they knew exactly what was about to happen.
Exactly. I mean, nine ball
coming down.
Yeah, but you gotta have a DB or a safety who could stop it though. So
exactly. But so I would say that it comes down to also like muscle structure. Because what happens is that you watch football players, they train different, they lift different than track athletes. They kind of require those dense muscles because of the pounding and the beating that they're going to get on the football field. And they're trying to balance that dense muscles with also the speed that they do have. So now they got to carry more weight, right? So, and I'm taking this for example of watching Jeff. When Jeff Demps was running track and playing football, we would go to track meets together and we would be roommates. And he literally would foam roll all night long. He would be rolling on a tennis ball or a softball, trying to get his muscles loose because his muscles and his muscle memory was about denseness. That's all they knew at that point in time because it just came from football. So he had to make sure he loosened his muscles up so he wouldn't pull anything or strain anything while he's trying to accelerate. So I think that's also one thing you have to take into consideration is it's not just pure speed that goes out on the football field. It's not just pure speed that goes out into the track. You got to prepare your muscles and your body structure for, like you said, stopping on a dime, turning, moving, or either just linear speed going straight forward, but you're reaching speeds that's going to be faster, clearly, than just an average football player, or even an elite football player. I tell my football athletes that I train all the time, I'm like, look, bro, like, I'm sorry. Y'all not cheetahs. Y'all are gazelles. And they look at me crazy like, you disrespecting me? Hold on, man. I'm pretty fast. I was like, no, you got to look at the situation. A gazelle, if you watch Natural Geographics, a gazelle can run at top speed and then turn on a dime. Who's chasing a gazelle? A cheetah. Now, a cheetah has more superior speed. If it was just a straight race, it could catch a gazelle all day long. But the fact is, it had to evolve to be able to turn and maneuver its speed to keep up with a gazelle because of those sharp turns and those angles. So what I look at as football players as gazelles, track athletes, or cheetahs.
I think that's a great analysis. I think another analysis is, man, the way that you say they have to lift. You know, football players have to flip their hips in almost every direction. Track runners, we don't. That's why we lift differently. We lift in a linear motion. Football players don't. They don't. They have to turn their hips and make obtuse angles to make different type of movements. So we definitely, muscle memory and what they require is a lot different from a football player. But I like that gazelle cheetah thing. I'm stealing that.
Gotcha. You got it, dog. You got it.
What's the next mailbag question?
From Christopher Hugh. He is the CEO of Artican. I'm telling you right now, good guy, man. He makes the wrists. He makes the bracelets. They're kind of beaded. And you see a lot of distance runners wearing them. Either Kenyans are wearing the Kenyan flag or the Ethiopians. That's where it really started at. He was like, you know, making, you know, wrist swag so athletes can go out there and represent their country. And now he makes all kind of bracelets for anything. He can make your name. He can do all kind of designs. So shout out to him. Shout out to Artican, man. They're doing a great job over there. They've been in the game for a while. His question was, what's up, fam? You've done a ton of business partnerships over your career. 4-figure, 5-figure, 6-figure, 7-figure deals. Which partnership over your length of your career was your favorite and why? So he said, curious if it's one that actually paid the bills or one that valued the relationship. Really, really good question, Chris. So I would say, obviously, I had a long relationship with Nike. And when you deal with Nike, it comes with a lot of perks. You know, obviously, more shoes that you can handle, gear that is top of the line that people have never seen, exclusive things. So those kind of perks are always going to kind of be, you know, in its own category, you know? And obviously when you deal with Nike, they are a cult movement. People sign with Nike because it's Nike. Even though we've known people, and LeBron, let's use LeBron as an example. LeBron signed with Nike because of he grew up knowing that Nike was a go-through. Nike was the brand, and he know he can build longevity with Nike when it comes to campaign advertisement. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the brands that really has stuck with me throughout the years, and I've been with them for a long haul. I would say one of my favorites, man, was actually X-Tep. You remember X-Tep?
Hey, I remember them high-top shoes you had with the wings. Boy, listen, if they could fit me, boy, boy, I ain't gonna lie, boy. I don't steal, but I was gonna steal them boys from you.
So, hey, those were some cool shoes. Actually, I couldn't fit them, man. I think I lied to you, bro. I think they could fit you. I just didn't give them to you. I don't know what happened, dog. They definitely weren't my size.
I did ask you about them. I was like, man, that shit look too small for you. That boy, like, if I can't wear them, ain't nobody gonna wear them.
Nah, because they were like, they were whole, like, it was a shoe, and on the outer part of the shoe was like dragon scales, and the wings coming off was like dragon wings, right? It was a pretty dope shoe for sure. I wish I had a picture of it still. I had to look sometime and show y'all. But dealing with X-Tep, it was almost like, It was almost like a blank check when I worked with them because they never had a track and field athlete for one. They never had a real athlete under, you know, saying their company. So I was the first. And my agent at the time was Ronaldo Nehemiah. He's really good at negotiating contracts, writing contracts, things like that. So he put together this whole contract where every time I ran, didn't matter if it was a Diamond League or not, it could have been the corner of the earth. They could have been in Antarctica. If I ran, I got a bonus. So every time I ran, I got a bonus. Every time I won, I got a bonus. Every time I would drop one of the fastest times in the world, I got a bonus. So I was getting bonuses on top of bonuses on top of bonus to the point where the company itself couldn't even keep up with my quarterly payments. They were starting to run together. But also the fact is, it was so cool being a part of a company and being one of one, you know? And going on trips to China, they sponsored a lot of marathons and a lot of distance races. And they did a good job of that. They used me as trying to figure out how they can get into other sports. And I loved it. I would be going to galas. I'd be out there in tuxedos in China. And what I mean that China is grand, it's parts of China that I never knew that even existed. When you do the stats, there's actually more millionaires in China than there are anywhere else in the world. And they have yachts. Like when they went over to Xiamen, like if it's on the coast, they have yachts, multiple yachts. Like if you was in Monaco, when you walk in some of these hotels, there's marble from the floor to the ceiling. And I mean, these ceilings aren't like if you walk into like a Marriott or a Hyatt or even a Ritz-Carlton, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm talking about like palace type in the, like, hello, 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 like echoes, you know what I mean? So China has hidden gems and China has money too. So it was one of those moments where I really enjoyed being a track and field athlete, being one of one. I got an opportunity to create my own uniforms. So I sat down with the creative team and they showed me exactly what they have. I picked out colorways. I was able to come through. Hell, that was the time I even made my own spikes. I actually bought a mold, how you make shoes, like the metal mold to make spikes. I made my own spikes. And I was going out there wearing all these different color spikes, any color I wanted, whatever I wanted, how I wanted to dress. They didn't care. They was like, go out there and be successful. Bring some hardware, bring some metals back to our company. And that's what I did.
Man, shout outs to X-Tep, man. We want to see y'all back in the sport, man.
For sure.
Come back over to this side of the world, man.
Yeah. I mean, as a young athlete, I also had, you know, Hershey's. I had Power Bar on point, Powerade, Canon cameras. So I had a couple of deals that were really lucrative and companies that stayed by me. So I guess to answer your question, Chris, for sure, a lot of these companies, as you become a better athlete, those companies start to help pay the bills, you know? But in the beginning, you know, you get these clusters. But as you stay with them and you be true to them, they be true to you.
Good answer. Good answer. Shoot. We have another question from C. Waits. Your favorite meet from each of these events? What was your favorite Diamond League event? Your favorite Outdoor World Championship? And you've been to three. Which was your favorite Olympics?
What's my favorite Diamond League? Man.
It could be where you've won or where you've went or a Diamond League final. It could be either or. Diamond League finals is nice because the check is a lot bigger.
That's true. That's true. For sure. You know what? Aesthetically, Monaco's always nice, right? Because you're going to Monaco, one of the richest countries in the world, if not the richest country in the world. You get to see, they ride around in Mercedes-Benz as taxis. You know, you get to see all the latest Ferraris and cars. I know you love cars.
I do.
Helicopters, yachts, you name it, they got it. It's crazy. And then the hotel we stay in is the famous hotel that kind of is on the famous bend for the Formula One, right? And it's just, it's nice. Top tier, right? I would say when it came to a Diamond League to go to, another favorite one was actually Doha was one of my favorite races because it was like perfect environment for a sprinter. It wasn't good for distance runners because of the heat. But think about if it's like 10:30 at night and you're about to run in Doha and the weather is 80 degrees already. So you get a good, nice, warm, the sun's not out. It's not like blazing hot, but it's warm. And then now, this is the old stadium, not the new stadium. So a breeze, a tailwind used to come over the top of the stadium and kind of creep down into the stadium. So now maybe the wind might have been a 2.1. And because of the wall of the stadium, it will block it and turn into like a 1.7 or 1.6. So you have just the allowable amount of wind, the right heat. And if you're ready and it's one of your first races of the season, so you know you're fired up and ready to go. So I would say Doha for sure is one of my favorites. Olympics. I'm gonna say, to be honest, man, I'm gonna say 2012, man. 2012, even though the history of 2004, where the Olympics obviously started in Greece, and to be able to come back around full circle and come back to Greece, and then me be the person that wins the fastest man title of that, it's just bar none. A special moment. Love it. Put a wreath on my head and everything. Love it. But I think that how London was laid out, the Olympic Village was like a small town. We stayed in like these townhomes and these apartments that had three stories. And then we had like a stoop or like a front porch and like chairs outside where everybody can hang out at. So you would know that you can bust a left and then go around the corner and then you're over there where the Great Britain would be. So it was like a little city and everybody know how to get to each other and have fun, hang out, things like that. So I would say London for that purpose. And obviously the fanfare out there is crazy for sports. It's crazy for the Olympics, crazy for track and field. So obviously the energy in the stadium was at a different level than other stadiums I've been to when it comes to the Olympics. What's that last one? What we got?
Sure. That was the last one, buddy.
Oh, that's it right there then. Okay. Okay.
That's it for our mailbag, man. We hope you guys enjoyed the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. We hope you guys join us on our next episode of Ready, Set, Go!
And we out.